Peter did not make the same mistake again. He went up the ladder in a single swift bound, and the bellow of the diesels covered any sound he might have made. With a knife, you never take the chance of the point turning against bone, if you have a choice of target. Peter picked the small of the back, at the level of the kidneys, where there was no bone to protect the body cavity. It is essential to put the blade in with all possible power. This decreases the chance of bone deflection, and it peaks the paralyzing effect of impact shock. Peter put the full weight of his rush behind the thrust. The paralysis is total if the blade is twisted a half turn at the same instant that the blade socks in hilt deep. The muscles in Peter's right forearm were bunched in anticipation of the moment in which he would twist the blade viciously in her flesh, quadrupling the size and the trauma of the wound. The polished stainless steel fascia of the Chris Craft's control panel reflected a distorted image, like those funny mirrors of the fairground. Only at the moment that Peter had committed himself completely, at the moment when he had thrown all his weight into the killing stroke, did he realize, with a sickening flash, that she was watching him in the polished steel control panel. She had been watching him from the moment he reappeared at the head of the ladder. The curved surface of the steel distorted her face, so that it appeared to consist only of two enormous eyes. It distracted him in that thousandth part of a second before the point of the blade entered flesh. He did not see her move. Blinding, numbing agony shot down his right flank and arm, from a point in the hollow where his collarbone joined the upper arm, while at the same instant something hit him on the inside of his forearm, just below the elbow. The knife stroke was flung outwards, passing an inch from her hip, and the point of the blade crashed into the control panel in front of her, scoring the metal with a deep, bright scratch. But Peter's numbed fingers could not keep hold on the hilt. The weapon spun from his grip, ringing like a crystal wine glass as it struck the steel handrail and rebounded over the side of the bridge into the cockpit behind him. He realized that she had struck backwards at him, not turning to face him, but using only the reflection in the control panel to judge her blow with precision into the pressure point of his shoulder. Now pain had crippled him, and the natural reaction was to clutch at the source of it. Instead, with some reflexive instinct of survival, he flung up his left hand to protect the side of his neck, and the next blow, also thrown backwards, felt as though it had come from a full-blooded swing of a baseball bat. He hardly saw it. It came so fast and hard, there was just the flicker of movement across his vision, like the blur of a hummingbird's wing, and then the appalling force of it crushing into the muscle of his forearm. Had it taken him in the neck where it was aimed, it would have killed him instantly. Instead, it paralyzed his other arm, and she was turning into him now, effortlessly, matching his bull strength with a combination of speed and control. He knew he must try and keep her close, smother her with his weight and size and strength. And he hooked at her with the clawed, crippled fingers of his knife hand. They caught for a moment, and then she jerked free. He had ripped away the flimsy strip of elasticized cloth that covered her breasts, and she spun lightly under and out of the sweep of his other arm as he tried desperately to club her down with his forearm. He saw that her face was bone white with the adrenaline overdose coursing her blood. Her lips were drawn back into a fixed snarl of concentration and fury, and her teeth seemed as sharp as those of a female leopard in a trap. It was like fighting a leopard. She attacked him with an unrelenting savagery and total lack of fear, no longer human, dedicated only to his total destruction. The long hair swirled about him, at one moment flicking like a whiplash into his eyes to blind and unbalance him, and she weaved and dodged and struck like a mongoose at the cobra, every movement flowing into the next, her taunting red-tipped breasts dancing and jerking with each blow she hurled at him. With a jar of disbelief, Peter realized that she was beating him down. So far he had managed barely to survive each blow that he caught on arm and shoulder. each time her bare feet crashed into his thigh or lower belly, each time her knees drove for his groin and jarred against the bone of his pelvis, he felt a little more of his strength dissipate, felt his reactions becoming more rubbery, just that instant slower. He had countered her attack with luck and instinct, but any instant she must land solidly and drop him, for she was never still, cutting him with hands and feet, keeping him off balance, and he had not hurt her yet, had not touched her with any of his counterstrokes. Still there was no feeling in his hands and fingers. He needed respite, he needed a weapon, and he thought desperately of the knife that had fallen into the cockpit behind her. He gave ground to her next attack, and the bridge rail caught him in the small of the back. At the same moment another of her strokes, aimed at the soft of his throat, deflected off his arm and crunched into his nose. Instantly his eyes flooded with tears, and he felt the warm, salt flood of blood over his upper lip and down the back of his throat. He doubled over swiftly. Then, in the same movement, he threw himself backwards, like a diver making a 1.5 from the 3-meter board. The rail behind him helped his turn in the air, and he had judged it finely. He landed like a cat on both feet, on the deck of the cockpit 10 feet below the bridge, flexing at the knees to absorb the shock, and flicking the tears from his eyes, wringing his arms to return blood and feeling. As he spun into a crouch, he saw the knife. It had slid down the cockpit into the stern scuppers. He went for it. The dive had taken her by surprise, just as she was poised for the final killing stroke to the back of his exposed neck. But she swirled to the head of the ladder and gathered herself, while below her Peter launched himself across the cockpit for the big, ugly ninja knife. She went for him feet first, dropping from 10 feet, and the bare soles of her feet hit him together, the impetus of her falling body enhanced by the stabbing kick that she released at the moment that she hit him. She caught him high in the back, hurling him forward so that the top of his head cracked into the bulkhead and darkness rustled through his head. He felt his senses going, and it required all his resolve to roll over and pull his knees swiftly to his chest to guard himself against the next killing stroke. He caught it on his shins and once again launched himself after the knife. His fingers felt swollen and clumsy on the rough checkered surface of the hilt, and at the moment they touched, he unwound his doubled-up body like a steel coil spring, lashing out with both feet together. It was a blind stroke, delivered in complete desperation. It was the first solid blow he had landed. It caught her at the moment when she had already launched herself into her next onslaught. Both his feet slammed into her belly just below the ribs, and had the flesh there been soft or yielding, it would have ended it. But she was just able to absorb the force of it with flat, hard muscle, though it hurled her backwards across the cockpit, with the breath hissing from her lungs and the long, slim body doubling over in an agonized convulsion. Peter realized that this was the only chance that he had had, and the only one he would ever have. Yet his body was racked with such pain that he could hardly drag himself up onto his elbow, and his vision swam and blurred with tears and blood and sweat. He did not know how he had managed it, some supreme exertion of will, but he was on his feet, with a knife in his hand, instinctively extending the blade down the back of his right thigh to keep it protected until the moment it had to be used, crouching as he went in, left arm raised as a shield, and knowing that now he had to end it swiftly. He could not go on longer. This was his last effort. Then she had a weapon also. Moving so swiftly that it had happened before she was halfway across the cockpit, she had knocked the retaining clip off the boat hook that stood in the rack beside the cabin entrance. It was 8 feet of heavy varnished ash, with an ornate but vicious brass head, and she cut at him with it, a low, swinging warning blow to hold him off while she forced air back into her empty lungs. She was recovering swiftly, much more swiftly than Peter himself. He could see the cold, killing light rekindle in her eyes. He knew he could not go on much longer. He must risk it all in one last total effort. He threw the knife, aiming at her head. The ninja was not designed as a throwing weapon. It rolled out of line of flight, hilt foremost. But still, it forced her to lift the staff of the boat hook and deflect it. It was the distraction he had wanted. Peter used the momentum of his throw to go in under the swinging staff, and he hit her with his shoulder while her arms were raised. Both of them reeled backwards into the cabin bulkhead, and Peter groped desperately for a grip. He found it in the thick, lustrous tresses of her hair, and he wove his fingers into it. She fought like a dying animal, with strength and fury and courage that he could never have believed possible. But now at last he could pit his superior weight and strength directly against hers. He smothered her against his chest, trapping one arm between their bodies, while he was able to pull her head backwards at an impossible angle, exposing the long, smooth curve of her throat. And then he scissored his thighs across her, so that those lethal feet and legs were unable to reach him, and they crashed over onto the deck. She managed, with an incredible effort, to swing her weight so that she landed on top of him, her breasts sliding against his chest, lubricated by sweat and blood that dribbled down from his nose. But Peter heaved all his remaining strength onto his shoulders and rolled back on top of her. They were locked breast to chest and groin to groin in some bizarre parody of the act of love. Only the stock of the boat hook came between them. Peter twisted down hard on the rope of hair in his left hand, pinning her head to the deck so that her eyes were only 6 inches from his, and blood from his nose and mouth dripped onto her upturned face. Neither of them had spoken a word. The only sound the hiss and suck of laboured breathing, the explosive grunt of a blow delivered, or the involuntary gasp of pain as it landed. They glared into each other's eyes, and at that moment neither of them was a human being. They were two animals fighting to the death, and Peter shifted quickly so the stock of the boat hook fell across her unprotected throat. She had not been ready for that, and she ducked her chin too late. Peter knew he could not dare to release his grip on her hair, nor the arm around her body, nor the scissors that enfolded her legs. He could feel the steely tension of her whole body that required all his own strength to hold. If he relaxed his grip in the slightest, she would twist away, and he would not have the strength to go on after that. With the elbow of the hand that held her hair, he began to bear down on the ash staff of the boat hook. Slowly, it crushed down into her throat. She knew it was over then, but still she fought on. As she weakened, Peter was able to transfer more and more of his weight onto the stock of the boat hook. Slowly, blood suffused her face, turning it dark mottled plum. Her lips quivered with each painful rasping breath, and a little frothy saliva broke from the corners of her mouth and ran back down her cheek. Watching her die was the most horrible thing Peter had ever had to do. He shifted cautiously, going for the few extra ounces of weight which would force the heavy wooden stock down that last eighth of an inch and crush in her throat, and she recognized the moment in her eyes. She spoke for the first time. It was a croak, slurred through swollen and gaping lips.
"They warned me."
He thought he had misheard her, and he checked the final thrust downwards, which would pinch out the last spark of life.
"I couldn't believe it."
The faintest whisper, only just intelligible.
"Not you."
Then the last resistance went out of her. Her body relaxed. The complete acceptance of death at last. The fierce green light went out in her eyes, replaced at the very end with a sadness so heavy that it seemed to acknowledge the ultimate betrayal of all goodness and trust.